Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Sunday, June the 20th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, reflections on Juneteenth, the first federal holiday that we've had in a number of years here in the United States, a look back and some reflections about the holiday and the meaning of Juneteenth, plus John Bercow in England, the former Speaker of the House of Commons, has switched to the Labour Party. Not necessarily a surprise. Audio from Mr. Bercow coming up, and also, why is Jack Reed, a Democratic senator, standing in the way of reform and overhaul and protection for victims and survivors of sexual assault in the military? All of that coming up next. Welcome back. And so here we are on the final full day of spring. That's right, this is the last full day of spring before we go to the, I guess it's the summer solstice they call it. The longest day of the year is tomorrow, June the 21st. I really cannot believe, or I really should believe it, but I cannot, how quickly this year is going by. Every year, once you get past a certain age, or once you get to a certain age, the years, the calendar years, just vanish. I'm sorry to frighten you. I'm sorry to put you in a state of, I don't know what, but it's a fact. I think those of you who know, who are going through that, understand it, that you turn around, it starts the year, you start the year in January, and then you turn around and it's already May, and you're trying to figure out where those last 4.5 or so months went, and it's just bizarre, but that's the way it is, right? And I remember when I was at an age where it seemed like time was moving so slowly. Glaciers. I mean, really. A glacial pace. It was that slow, but those days are long gone. And they ain't coming back. Oh, well. You know, but anyway, here we are on this Sunday, and thank you very much for listening to this podcast. Every time you listen, I really do appreciate you, because I do talk a lot. Well, that's what a podcast is about. I know many podcasters spend literally 22 minutes and they're done. But the kinds of things that I speak about here don't take typically do not take 22 minutes. I mean, I always endeavor to try to make these episodes shorter, but sometimes that can't happen. But this is, I think, an episode where I think it will be relatively brief. The subject matter, though, is very important. And first, I want to get to Juneteenth. And I would, you know, want to know, how did you spend yesterday, Juneteenth? June the 19th, 2021. What was that day like for you? Did you, and I put this word in, this next word in quotes, celebrate Juneteenth? Did you party it up and live it up? Did you reflect? Did you pay homage to the ancestors? Did you think about the history? Did you buy black? Did you do any of those things? Or did you just completely not do any of those things at all, and it was just another day for you? I really would like to know. You could drop me a line on Twitter, at the Popcorn REEL, or you can do the email thing at Politipot, yes. It might sound like I'm on it. I don't know. Politocrat Pod. Oh my goodness, that's quite a mouthful to say. Should change that email address. But it's politocratpod@gmail.com. And let me know. I may put up a poll on this as well on Twitter at the Popcorn REEL. But I'm just curious. I mean, for me, I reflected, as you could tell, obviously, the answer is in yesterday's episode, reflection, and really giving some thought to this day and the history of it and how, quite frankly, corporate influences have absolutely wasted no time at all. I don't know if I spoke that much about it yesterday, but corporate influences have absolutely wasted no time in putting their imprimatur on the holiday. I mean, my gosh, can we just have the holiday and actually reflect on it and actually resolve to do things that will help black folk out to, you know what I mean? Well, that we can go vote, that we can pass the For the People Act and the John Lewis voting room, which I talked about this yesterday. I mean, can we do that? I mean, you got these, you know, Bath and Body Works with this Juneteenth ad. I saw that on Twitter. Goldie Taylor, who is on Twitter, and you can find her. I think she's at Goldie or at Goldie Taylor. I don't remember which, but I will find out shortly. She tweeted out, and I tell you, and it is at, she is at Goldie Taylor, G-O-L-D-I-E, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R. And she, she just tweeted this out yesterday, and it just really rings home. It really does. You know, it really brings it home. Because this is the truth. This is absolutely the truth about what the corporates do. Wasting no time at all. No, waste no time at all in doing this. You know, you kind of have to be a little suspicious at the speed at which, well, I shouldn't say the speed because this has been going on for 30 years. Plus, there's been a fight to get Juneteenth holiday as a federal holiday. But I just look at this and I think, you know, this is a bunch of nonsense. It's a bunch of nonsense. This is a bunch of nonsense. And Goldie Horn tweets this out. I'm tired already. And she includes a caption of an email that was sent to her from Bath and Body Works. And the title of the email is, We're celebrating Juneteenth, Bath and Body Works. And I'm going to read this out to you, at least part of it. The U.S., we're celebrating Juneteenth, they say at Bath and Body Works in this ad that was sent to Goldie, and Goldie Taylor tweeted this out to all of her followers yesterday on Juneteenth. The U.S. doesn't have just one Independence Day, it has two. Juneteenth, I mean, this is what the ad says, I'm reading it. Juneteenth, a.k.a. Freedom Day or Emancipation Day. But I'm going to just stop here. Juneteenth was not Emancipation Day. Juneteenth was an event where General Gordon Granger rode into Galveston Bay in Texas and delivered news to the enslaved black people in that state and told them, by this General Order Number 3, I hereby proclaim that you are free. It's basically what, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what he said. And again, he said that they were free. And yes, indeed, there were some black people who were enslaved who were now no longer enslaved anymore. They were free. However, enslavement was still going on all over the country. There were numbers of places that it was still going on. And not only that, this order that was given to, that was proclaimed and read out by General Granger, was 2.5 years late. I mean, the Emancipation Proclamation proclaimed freedom, but there was still enslavement all over the place in the United States. This is back in 1863 when the proclamation came down, Lincoln, on January 1st. And the enslaved black people in Texas didn't get to learn this news for more than 2.5 years. 2.5 years later. So you've got to be talking about that. And then on top of that, remember, and I talked about this yesterday, and I mentioned Annette Gordon Reed's book on Juneteenth. And she talks about it, and we all know it. There was tremendous violence against black people by white people on Juneteenth and after it, and continuing and still going on now. So this ad, the danger, and again, Bree Newsom pointed this out on Twitter as well, at Bree, B-R-E-E, Newsom, N-E-W-S-O-M-E, is her Twitter handle, to the best of my recollection there. And she said the same thing, and I said this yesterday, and I've said this a few times in the last few days, on this here podcast, that these lies, you know, people in the media, people on the news, people, some black politicians even, some of them, oh yes, this marks the beginning of it, marks our freedom, we're still not free now. I not to sound like a broken record here, but my goodness me, I mean, you've got politicians of any hue, as it were, talking this nonsense. Oh, we are free. It marked our independence. Were we? And then what happened within 12 years when Reconstruction went belly up, when went bust? And then you had the Hayes-Tilden Compromise, 1876. What happened then? And then you withdrew the federal troops, the Union troops, the federal troops, and out of there in the South. And then what happened? More violence. What do you think the federal troops were there for in the first place? Anyway, you see, this is what happens when you don't know your history. And you've got states wanting to get rid of your history, wanting to get rid of American history, because this is American history, and they want to get rid of it. They're passing bills telling you, oh, no, you can't teach that. It's off blooming history. Yes, we can damn well teach it, and yes, we damn well will teach it. Thank you very much. Anyway, get a little bit exercised here about this kind of nonsense that's going on. And it's absolute bullcrap. And here's the rest of the bullcrap continuing on here in this Bath and Body Works ad. Is the anniversary, Juneteenth, is the anniversary of freedom for black Americans. Wrong. I already explained why that's not true. Okay? It is not the anniversary of freedom for black Americans. Damn it. You know, I am going to tag Bath and Body Works in this, in a tweet, which I'm going to make a clip of this and put this on Twitter. And these folks have to wake up. And who is sending out these blooming emails? Who is sending these emails out? And if it's a black person, which I don't think it is, but if it is, you need to get some consciousness into you. And if it's a white person sending them, you need to go to school. Preferably not at one of the states that's barring being taught history, your history, American history. And you need to get some consciousness, or hire some conscious black folk who write these darn releases. This is absolutely backward. You don't know your history. This is what happens. At Bath and Body Works, we're celebrating and continuing to deliver on our promises by recognizing Juneteenth in a bigger way. This is a moment to remember the journey of black Americans, and it's one that we must recognize as we continue to work on our commitments to our associates and customers and these communities. Listen to that, these communities. This is a moment to remember the journey. The journey was paved with blood and death. To remember the journey. And you don't even specify what the journey is. It's, oh, you remember, to remember, I can't even talk. To remember the journey of black Americans. This is just so, you know, it's ridiculous. It's embarrassing. It's shameful. It's disgusting. And it's pathetic. And for Bath and Body Works, I don't know how many of you listening to this are members of Bath and Body Works, whether you patronize them, whether you're a member of their fan club, whether you, you know, you whatever. I don't know. Maybe you shop in there frequently. Maybe you have an account there. I don't know. But what I do know is that once you hear stuff like this from Bath & Body Works, at minimum, you should be sending them a letter or a tweet or something to tell them this is bull. Because this press release, this little idiot, this bullcrap email, and thank you, Goldie Taylor, for sharing it, this is bullshit. How on the living earth can you have a blooming email like this here talking about this is a moment to remember the journey? Dude, don't you realize that this journey is not some excursion on National Lampoon's Vacation? This is about hundreds of years of oppression and enslavement and murder. And it's talking about this like it's a little picnic, a little trip upstate someplace. It's embarrassing. But this is what happens when you have people who don't care writing these press releases, who want to pretend that they're the friend of black folk, and they don't do jack. It's like what happened last year, just over a year ago with George Floyd. And these companies, these corporate bullcrap artists, talking about, oh, yes, we recognize that Black Lives Matter. And, you know, oh, we're going to do everything we can. And these mother, they have not done a damn thing. They've not put any email, they have not put any money in, they've not put in a damn thing. And they're talking about, oh, we're going to do this for black folk. We're going to give you the moon, black folk. We're going to give you your own country. We're even going to make your own continent. Oh, yeah, there's one called Africa. But we're going to make you a new continent. I mean, these people promised you the friggin' world a year ago, and where are their asses now? They're nowhere to be seen. It's just an absolute shit show. And you know, I'll tell you something else, dear listener, that is absolutely roiling me. These folks try to rewrite your history and put it in your face and act like they're doing you a favor. Oh, we're going to do what we can, and we're going to... You motherfucker. Listen to me. These corporates, listen, if you have a Bed and Bath or Bed Bath and Beyond, no, if you have a Bath and Body Works account, or you've shopped with them, or you're a frequent shopper with them, or you are on their email list, can you please spare a moment to find out who their marketing department is or their CEO? And can you contact that person? Can you make a phone call? Can you email them? Can you freaking tweet them? I'm sure they've got a Twitter account. I'll at them in this message because I'm going to post a clip of this as well. I mean, this is just reprehensible. You can't do this to our history. We're not going to allow you to get away with this bull anymore. This is absolute bullshit. And you've got to be kidding me. You know, just think about this. Can you imagine these folks doing that with Jewish people? Can you ever imagine that? And they shouldn't ever do it with Jewish people or anyone else. Could you freaking imagine? Oh, we want to pause and remember the journey. I mean, can you imagine? And then just not mention anything about what that was for Jewish people? Can you imagine? Come on. And damn right, that should never, ever, you should, and I tell you, I'll be right there cussing their ass out on that too. And you're going to try to do that to us? We pause to remember the journey of black Americans. I mean, are you, journey, like, come on, dude. This was more than a freaking journey. This wasn't some freaking excursion. 400 blooming years. And it's just, and some corporate wanker is going off on, oh, the journey. Who wrote that? And not only that, who proofread that? And not only that, who allowed that to go out and get sent out on an email distribution list? Absolutely pathetic. And these corporates are doing this. And this is where the problem is, right? Because Bath and Body Works and other companies, they haven't committed to a thing. They aren't going to hire more black folk. They aren't going to put black folk in positions of power, in real power. I'm not talking about being on a friggin' board. I'm talking about doing stuff, shaking up shit. They're not going to do this. And not only that, they're not going to cede their ownership of it. Okay, let a black person have 45, 50% ownership, 55% ownership then. If you want to commit to a journey. And these communities, if you want to commit to, in your press, as you say in your email, these communities. Like we're some poor and tiled and huddled friggin' masses. You know how many different black communities there are? Oh, God. I mean, don't lump these communities. You know, if you want to do something for these communities of black folk, then give our asses 55% of your friggin' company and let us craft it and shape it as a company that's working for us so that we can actually put out some press releases that aren't bullshit. Because that's what this one is that I just read out to you. It's absolute farce. And anybody who doesn't recognize that really needs to read a couple of books. Because this thing here is a downright embarrassment. And this is what happens when you celebrate a holiday. Celebrate. And I use that word loosely. I reluctantly said that word, I think, yesterday's episode and on Twitter as well. I should never. Because what is there to celebrate? And then people have also pointed that out on Twitter. Drew Dixon's pointed this out. Bree Newsom's pointed this out. A number of people on Twitter have pointed this out. What are you celebrating? Really? Because I'm telling you, it was just the beginning. And as a lot of people have rightly pointed out on Twitter, that there is still, there's enslavement going on in all kinds of forms. Mental slavery. Bob Marley, Emancipate Yourself From. I'm not going to try to sing it. I was tempted to, but I won't. So if we have to really look at this, and these corporates, we have to look at what this culture is and what it's doing to try to own our holiday. We fight for it, and now you got these corporate wankers who are now controlling it. And it's part of a whole system. And that's why this is allowed to happen. And I think one of the things to do to counteract it is to have our own our own media. Black-owned media is going to be, and it is with Roland Martin Unfiltered here in the United States. He has fans all over the world. I mean, we need to continue building platforms like that so that any of us can start building our platforms and counteract this garbage and these corporations. We can't let that slide. We can't let that stuff slide. And we're not going to let it ride. We are not going to let it slide or ride. Because you cannot get away with that. A press release like that, I find that to be an offensive press release, rather, by the way. And it doesn't have to have the word in it. It doesn't have to say anything like that. But that is an offensive press release by Bath and Body Works. And I'm telling you, that's indicative of the corporate culture. It is. Come on now. You know that's true. Welcome back. I guess the other thing that I wanted to talk about Juneteenth and yesterday is just reflecting on also the thing that this culture does and does very well to very poisonous effect is to center the holiday around one or two people who made it possible. And I celebrate Miss Lee, Opal Lee, and I do respect her immensely. I've sang her praises here yesterday and in other episodes. And she worked damn hard to get this holiday done. But what my issue is, not with Opal Lee, is the media. That's why I can't stand corporate media, which is why we've got to have our own media platforms. Black-owned media, alternative media, progressive media. I've talked about them on and off throughout the time I've been doing this podcast. I've told you about the Black Eagle, Joe Madison, who brings a really great critical thinking aspect to things. I've told you about Roland Martin Unfiltered. The most important digital daily show there is. It's pretty much the only one that brings you the news the way Roland does about black communities everywhere and from black perspective. You won't get that anywhere else. You really won't. And on a continuous basis, and he is doing excellent things, and we need to support him as well and his crew that keep that going, because there's a lot of work that he's doing and that they're doing, and they're doing it by themselves. And, you know, there are other media outlets too, right, that are on the right side of things. But, you know, these corporates, I mean, that's what they do. They center something around one person. And then when they talk about the history, they omit in their discussions critical things that are instrumental to the history of whatever the situation, the event is. In this case, Juneteenth. You cannot talk about Juneteenth without talking about the fact that it was a 2.5-year delay before they got this news, number one. Number in Texas, before the enslaved black persons there got the news. Number two, that there was, and Annette Gordon Reed has talked about this, and I played the audio of it yesterday, of the violence. There was violence going on all the time. What, you know, before black folk heard, learned of the freedom that they were going to be getting, end quote, and during and after. This white backlash was extremely violent against black people. Again, I've said this before, they do not want you here. And they do not want you free if you are here. And case in point, Juneteenth. Case in point, Derek Chauvin. That shit has not changed, as you can tell. Okay, so he got convicted, but that was only after the world said, hey, look, Black Lives Matter, and this is wrong, dude. You can't murder us. And we still don't know what the outcome of the sentence is going to be, because the sentencing is coming up later on this week, the 25th, which is what, Thursday? And Lord knows. I think it's Thursday or Friday. One of those 2 days. I forget which. I think it's Friday. But the point is, yes, it would be Friday of this coming week. You know, of this week. So, I mean, come on. Look at Breonna Taylor. Where's the justice for her family? And don't tell me, oh, she got a settlement. Money is not going to do anything for that family to bring Breonna Taylor back. And I get it. Nothing will. But there's got to be some recognition by the system that took her life. The state-sanctioned violence. That they need to pay a price. And agents of that system, those cops, need to pay a price. They need to be behind bars. But no, they'll be on. No, we're not indicting them. The black DA or the black AG, Attorney General of Kentucky. I don't even want to say his name. He's just disgusting. The black Attorney General of Kentucky. No. I'm going to indict the cop for shooting in the wall next door, though. But not the cops, the same cop who pumped 30 bullets or 20 bullets into Breonna Taylor as she slept. The wall is more important. Wall lives matter. I mean, can you? That's what he said. It's just thoroughly evil and disgusting. Okay, Daniel Cameron, I've said your name. Now shut up. This is just horrible. It's horrible. So has anything changed that much? And do you really think that enslavement is over? Okay, as I said yesterday, black folk aren't walking around in chains and freaking shackles. However, one more thing on Juneteenth. I want to shout out to Malcolm the Ray on Twitter. That's at Malcolm the Ray, R-A-Y, on Twitter. Malcolm Ray, who is a voice actor and is someone who I think is a talented and very generous person, yesterday on Juneteenth sent out a tweet that read, good day, happy Juneteenth. Black content creators, I'd like to make a thread for us to signal boost your content. Actors, artists, YouTubers, plug yourselves in this thread and let your creativity be seen. And he opened the door for every person who is black and a content creator, an actor, a YouTuber, artist, do their thing, post on his thread what they do. And I was a person that also put my credentials on there as well. And it was really great to see all of these black content creators on Malcolm the Ray's thread on Twitter. So I just want to say again here, thank you, because I did thank him on Twitter yesterday. And I want to thank Malcolm the Ray again. Follow him on Twitter. What a very generous thing to do. And in the spirit of, you know, a date like Juneteenth, where people are trying to get to a semblance of freedom, which, of course, as I've said a million times, did not begin on Juneteenth. I mean, the idea that enslavement ended on Juneteenth is just not true. Juneteenth did not end slavery. I can't say that enough. I'm simply saying that it was a very nice gesture on a day of remembrance, and also on a day that really is not as happy as people would like to make you think it was, that there are fellow people in this world who believe in lifting up people who are black. There are people in this world who believe in that, and people who are black who believe in the importance of that. And so I just want to say thank you to you, Malcolm the Ray on Twitter. Please follow him. He's a really generous soul and a good person. And thank you again, Malcolm, for not just allowing me to post on your thread. I mean, I know you've got a whole lot more Twitter followers than I do. But I just want to thank you for allowing all of us to do that, not just myself, not only myself. There's so many people that posted their talents and skills and what they do and links to all that. And just look at that, how powerful that is, how beautiful that is, that brother allowed people that he had the generosity and the foresight to do that. Because I'm going to be honest with you, I did not even think about doing something like that. But yet it makes perfect sense. And we've got to keep doing things like that. So again, thank you very much, Malcolm. Thank you very much.
We've all noticed in recent months a sticker in your car making derogatory comments about Brexit. No, this is a serious point about partiality. Have you driven that car with a sticker there?
That sticker on the subject of Brexit happens to be affixed to or in the windscreen of my wife's car. She is entitled to her views. That sticker is not mine, and that's the end of it.
There's a noble and learned lady, the Baroness, whatever it is, I can't remember what it is.
Nuji. We do not address people by the titles of their spouses. The Shadow Foreign Secretary has a name, and it's not Lady something. We know what her name is, and it is inappropriate and frankly sexist to speak in those terms. Before the imposition of the migrant ban, I would myself have been strongly opposed to an address by President Trump in Westminster Hall. After the imposition of the migrant ban by President Trump, I am even more strongly opposed to an address by President Trump in Westminster Hall. As far as this place is concerned, I feel very strongly that our opposition to racism and to sexism and our support for equality before the law and an independent judiciary are hugely important considerations in the House of Commons.
When an opposition member found that you had called me a stupid woman, you did not apologise in this chamber.
No. I'll deal with the point. I dealt with that matter months ago in remarks that I made to the House of Commons, to which the Right Honourable Lady in our various meetings since has made no reference, and which requires from the Chair today no elaboration whatsoever. This is not, however, a normal prorogation. It is not difficult. It is not standard. It's one of the longest for decades, and it represents, not just in the minds of many colleagues,
but huge numbers of people outside, an active executive fiat. I completely understand why very large numbers of members are much more comfortable staying where they are. Mr. Stewart, if you don't like it, you're perfectly entitled to your view. I couldn't give a flying flamingo what your view is. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you very much indeed.
That was the voice of then Speaker of the House of Commons in England, Mr. John Bercow, and he was certainly a presence in the just over 10 years or so that he sat in the Speaker's chair there in Parliament in Westminster in London. And it was always, on the times that I have gone to visit my hometown to observe what was going on in the House of Commons and the public, I don't know if they are now, obviously, but certainly back in the last few years prior to this pandemic, we were allowed to go into the House of Commons and observe from the gallery and look at the proceedings of Prime Minister's questions. And there he was, larger than life itself, Mr. John Bercow, Speaker of the House. The Conservative, who long tendered his resignation from that party, as he points out, and I'm going to play you the interview or part of it from Sky News that took place earlier today. It was announced yesterday and in today's Observer newspaper in England that John Bercow is switching to the Labour Party. And he says that the party is the party that is the one most in line with his values. The Labour Party is the one. So Labour Party, of course, has taken a few big hits, some of them well-deserved over the last few years. They did not do well in these elections, these by-elections this time around. Again, were very, very poor, lost a lot more seats. They lost Hartlepool. They lost all, these places. It's just incredible. The kinds of seats that Labour lost. And, you know, the leadership is all over the place. It has been for a number of years, including when Corbyn was in there. And now Sir Keir Starmer is there. And my goodness me, shuffling around a cabinet is not going to change the feng shui necessarily. Well, it might. But this is just absolutely ridiculous what's going on with the politics. But that's a whole nother story I don't want to veer into. In as far as England and politics are concerned at the minute, because no one wants to talk about Brexit, and I can go on forever about how Brexit has failed. But I'll get back to John Bercow. And John Bercow has switched to the Labour Party, which to me is not really a surprise. And those of you who observe politics in England and in the UK at large and know about Speaker Bercow know well that he has long had disdain for the Conservative Party, ever since he resigned from it, and if not before that, and he joined the Conservatives as a teenager. But the Conservatives over the last, I would say a lot more than 20 years, I'd say 40 years, if not more, have been an absolute disgrace. And some will listen to this and say, they would say longer than 40 years, much more. I'm talking, I'd go 50 years. And some people, like I say, would say longer than that. But what I'm saying here is that John Bercow, who is now a member of the Labour Party, appeared on Trevor Phillips on Sunday. Trevor Phillips is a broadcast journalist for Sky News, and Trevor Phillips is not a very good interviewer. And in some ways, and I'm going to play this nearly roughly 9 minutes here. You're going to hear, A, that he is not a very good interviewer. I'm sorry that I'm prejudicing this in advance, but I have to. Because you're also going to hear some very, very subtle digs that John Bercow makes at Trevor Phillips that are almost imperceptibly there, but they are there. One of them is, I know you have your journalistic responsibilities. Listen out for that line. Your journalistic duties and responsibilities. Listen out for that line. Because that's really code for, I know you have to ask me these dumbass questions that aren't about anything but BS. Listen very closely, it's really subtle. I picked it up right away when he said it. Yay for me. I know, brag. But the other line where he's having a dig is, well, it's not really a dig, it's just the outward facts is, let's stick to the issues. He actually says, this is about the issues, this is not about personalities. And what I have said and what many others have said for so long is that because Sky News is corporate media too, it's just UK corporate media. It's actually owned by Comcast, an American company. American multinational, so there we go. So I do watch some corporate media, I guess. If I'm watching Sky News, that is corporate. Hello. So, it used to be owned by Rupert Murdoch. I did not watch it back then. And Sky, while it does propagandize, it's a little bit better than the BBC, I think. BBC is just a Tory haven. And we don't need to have any party being overly fanned at. I mean, the Labour Party hardly ever is anyway to begin with. And the only way you can really find any evidence that it is fanned to is the Daily Mirror. The Daily Mirror is basically the only publication in all of England, and there's maybe one other, that does tip its hat more to the Labour side of things. But the point is that's in an oasis of bloomin' Tory rags and right-wing rags that run the bloomin' place, that run Fleet Street. They run Fleet Street. The Barclay brothers and them, they run it. And so it's a very lonely place if you're a Labour person trying to get some blooming news. Yeah, it's a I'm talking about in terms of the broadsheets and the tabloids. It's a lonely place. And then you got The Guardian, you got The Observer. Oh, well, yeah, that, you know, of course John Bercow went to them for a reason. Because they are a bit more looking at Labour's side and a bit more to the left of things. And for the people, if you will. And there's some damn good writers at The Guardian. I could mention them all now. Marina Hyde and Polly Toynbee, and I could go on and on and on. But all of this waffling by yours truly is to just say that, listen out for this. When John Bercow also says this is about the issues, it's because, he says it's because the corporate news media, and myself again and many others have said, the corporate news media is obsessed with personalities, doesn't tackle the issues. I think English media does so a little bit better, but that's not saying a lot. It's not saying a lot. Because certainly here in the US, it's all about personalities. Who's up, who's down, who's winning, who's losing, winners and losers. Like it's a blooming stock market play. And the whole thing is covered that way. Yeah, who's winning, who's losing, who has a staffer upset at them, who's in this scandal with whom. Not about the issues that affect you and I every day. I mean, it's not about education. You don't hear any real conversations about education. You don't hear any about healthcare. You don't hear. It's all about the personality involved. This person's upset at that person. That person's upset at this person. Someone WhatsApped someone else. And I've talked about this. It's just maddening. And so John Bercow was getting at that again in the interview that I'm about to play for you. And it went right over Trevor Phillips' head. And it was a poor interview. If you listen, you'll hear it. And you can judge for yourself, but I'm sorry to prejudice this. But this is really let me just play you what transpired, at least most of it. This was on Trevor Phillips on Sunday. Yes, on Sunday, today, in Sky News in the UK, with John Bercow.
Do you want rid of it? And if you want rid of it, you have then to pose to yourself the question and to answer it. How is that to be achieved? And the reality of the matter is that in the United Kingdom, the only credible vehicle for the removal of this government is the election of a Labour government committed to equality, social justice, internationalism, and a fairer and more inclusive society. That's the Labour brand.
I know you're a person who chooses your words very carefully, John. You used the expression, this government, I think three or four times this morning. At what point did you decide you couldn't be a Conservative? Was it when the Conservative Party was taken over by Boris Johnson? Or was it something that changed in you?
No, it was something that changed in me. And I think...
Oh, so it's not Boris Johnson.
I owe it to myself and to you and to everybody else to be on the record about it and for there to be no uncertainty. So if you're saying to me, is it principally about Boris Johnson? The honest answer to that is no. And in fact, there has been, I think, already some confusion and misrepresentation of that point. It's not personal against Boris Johnson. I do think that he is someone who has only a nodding acquaintance with the truth in a leap year. And I think that the utter contempt with which he has treated Parliament is lamentable. And I think it has exacerbated the very strong feelings of resentment towards him, because I think a lot of people feel that's not the way to behave. Telling the truth in and to Parliament matters. Circumventing Parliament is wrong. Treating Parliament with disdain is objectionable. But no, I have over a long period evolved my political thinking. I wasn't a member of a party throughout my tenure as Speaker, because it would have been quite wrong to be. I didn't take a view. I sought to facilitate the House of Commons to express its view and all individual members to put their points across, because that's the responsibility of the Speaker. Now I'm a private citizen, as Robert Buckland says, I'm entitled to take a political view, yeah. And my view is a left-of-centre view. I identify with Labour values, Labour principles, Labour policies.
I'm going to come to Labour in a second, but you've used the words xenophobic, nationalistic. You have just said some, let's say, less than fond things about Boris Johnson. It's the party you don't like, isn't it? And you don't like Conservatives anymore.
Well, I don't dislike individual Conservatives. I have still a number of Conservative friends, and I can admire and respect very much, Trevor, people across the political spectrum with a vast miscellany of different views on the understanding that they're honest and principled and standing up for the principles in which they believe. So it's not a question of personalities, it's a question of the issues. But if you say, do I like the Conservative Party? The answer is no. And I'm absolutely clear that I am not, these days, a Conservative. So it's not about Boris Johnson. As Tony Benn used to say, it's not about personalities, it's about policies.
All right. You know what they're saying, aren't they? Boris Johnson didn't give you a peerage, and Keir Starmer will.
Now,
that up.
Well, I can answer that very simply. I've had absolutely no discussion whatsoever, either with Keir Starmer or any other member of the Labour leadership, about that matter. There has been no barter, no trade, no deal whatsoever. And if I may very politely say so, and I do, the people who make what they think is that potent and coruscating criticism of me are operating according to their own rather low standards. Let's deal with the issue rather than impugn people's motives. It's got nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Right. Before we leave that, Leader of the Opposition conceivably might be watching this programme. It might be occurring to him right now, I must bring up John and offer him a peerage. If he were to do that, what would you say?
Well, I think there's a lot to be said, Trevor, for the old Willie Whitelaw adage. Personally, I think it is best to cross bridges only when one comes to them. It isn't in my mind. It's not part of the game plan. I haven't discussed it. I'm not waiting for it. What I'm motivated by is a commitment to equality, social justice, and internationalism. I believe absolutely passionately. And these are the issues that, on levelling up, the government mouths the mantra, but it doesn't know the meaning of the mantra. If you look at the recent record, the government's own education czar said £15,000 million is needed to level up, and the government has offered less than one-tenth of that. Let's focus on the issues. Slashing aid budget, it's wrong. It's objectionable. Utterly shameful.
We talk about these things a lot on this programme, but, you know, we have the excitement of having you here this morning. So let's talk about you.
With pleasure.
It could be said that this is a typical Burko grand gesture to avoid speculation as part of your legacy of the criticism of you as presiding over a culture of bullying in the Houses of Parliament. How do you respond to that? That this is not really what you're about. What you're really trying to do is to bury all of that.
I'm not trying to bury anything. I think the suggestion that I presided over that culture is quite wrong. I'm not going to talk about individual instances because there is a confidentiality about that process which shouldn't be compromised or disrespected in any way. I can just say, however, there was one individual who brought a complaint of bullying against me. It was investigated and it was rejected. But I put to you again, Trevor, and I appreciate you've got your journalistic responsibility. Let's focus on the issues.
No,
as far as I'm concerned, the issues are what caused me to make the decision
I've made. Last point. Speak honestly to me.
I always do.
Can you say that you never did anything that you felt now you regret, or you thought might have been objectionable, or that might have been something that, when you look back now, you think, I wish I hadn't done that?
Oh, good heavens.
In relation to this issue of bullying and so on.
Gosh, I would have to cast my mind back. We all make mistakes. Have I been perfect in every instance? Can I say that with the benefit of hindsight, I'd never have done something differently? Of course I couldn't. But I come back to the central proposition. One has, as a private citizen, the right to make a judgment about which political parties to support. I believe, in terms of values, the Labour Party is preferable to the Conservative Party. And as far as Keir Starmer is concerned, I don't know whether he's going to make it politically or not, but I think he's an honest, decent, intelligent person who has come into politics as the continuation of public service. And the real issue in my mind is, who has the vision of a more equitable society? Who thirsts Indeed. To deliver social mobility? Well, who wants to better the lot of people less fortunate than a political leader? On that calculus, Keir Starmer is vastly preferable to Boris Johnson.
You've talked about Labour's values and policies. I have to confess, I've been doing this programme for some weeks now. I've yet to drag anything that looked like a policy out of a Labour spokesperson. What is a policy or value that you think Labour has that really offers this vision?
I'll give you two examples. One domestic and one international. A domestic commitment to levelling up and the proper funding of education so that those who have been dramatically damaged as a consequence of the pandemic have the chance to recover. That's the first example. And the second example, which speaks to the DNA of a progressive party, is that the Labour Party thinks it is utterly wrong and immoral to slash the aid budget, cutting provision for the poorest and most destitute people on the face of the planet, who don't live on a dollar a day. They exist on a dollar a day.
Okay.
That is wrong, period.
I'm afraid I have to ask pretty much everybody who has experienced government and been seen in the Conservative Party this today. Matt Hancock, completely useless or what?
Well, I think it would be fair for me to say that I would buy Matt at my valuation and sell him at his and realise a healthy profit in the process.
I think I've worked out exactly what that means. Well, we'll see how Hancock's fare. Thank you very much, Sean Burko.
Trevor, thank you very much indeed. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Did you spot the digs? Did you hear them? When he said, I know you have your journalistic responsibilities and your duties. Did you hear that? John Burko, I mean, again, he uses words, as you heard Trevor Phillips say too, uses words very carefully and very precisely and very clearly. And his enunciations are very clear as well. And he did that plenty in his 10-year tenure as Speaker. And I know the Conservatives absolutely hated John Burko as Speaker. They hated him. They despised him. And it was mutual, as I indicated earlier, before the interview that you heard. There, at least most of it. It wasn't the full interview, but it's almost the full thing that you just heard. And John Burko absolutely has no love for the Conservatives. And I knew, and I'm sure many of you who are familiar with John Burko knew this, that he was basically a Labour speaker. I mean, meaning not that he pandered to Labour or not that he pandered against the Conservatives or for them, but his whole mindset was much more toward Labour and much more towards egalitarianism. I shouldn't be sectionalizing this as left versus right, but he cared more about the people and it showed. Although I know people will say, well, he bullied, and he just pointed out in the interview that the only investigation that's been brought against him found that it was dismissed because there was no evidence that he bullied. And that was a big story in his tenure, is that he bullied people and also, I think, was accused of harassment of female MPs or at least female staffers. I don't know If I've got that right, but if I don't, I apologize, certainly. If I do, then it's alleged, because no case has been successful. And I think you heard Speaker Burko say so there. Of course, the speaker now is Lindsay Hoyle, who I played a clip of earlier this past week, having to, you know, basically kick the behind of Boris Johnson, Sir Lindsay Hoyle. And by the way, it's traditional for speakers of the House of Commons to get a knighthood, a peerage or a knighthood, after they've completed their tenures. It's usually done. And the Tories did not recommend that at all for Speaker Burko. And so there's all that's on. That's a kind of a minor thing. Probably not for John Burko, if he's being really honest with you, and he is always a straight shooter, as it were. But I'm sure that does eat him up a little bit. But then again, it's about issues. And I do agree with him on that. I'm a big fan of, full disclosure, I am a big fan of John Burko. I do like him. And I do, and he shows he's got a soul. When Joe Cox, and by the way, we are in the commemoration month of her murder, if I'm not mistaken. It was either May or June. I believe it was June of 2016. I'm going to have to go look that up. I should know this. And Joe Cox, oh, dearie me, I need to do a separate episode on Joe Cox. I have talked about it before here on the Political Right Daily podcast. There is an election going on in her district, Batley and Spen in Yorkshire. I believe that's maybe, I don't want to say what part of Yorkshire because I'll get it wrong. I might get it wrong, but Batley and Spen, which I believe is West Yorkshire. I don't know. Oh, no. But Batley and Spen is a place where the Labour candidate, I think her name her last name is Ledbetter. I think it's Lisa Ledbetter. I'm not sure. But she's running, the Labour candidate. Vote for her, please. And don't vote for George Galloway. Oh, God. For heaven's sakes, for those of you in Batley and Spen, up there in Yorkshire, in England, for goodness sake, on June the 6th or July the 6th or whenever that is, in July the first week, do not vote for that clown. Vote for the Labour candidate, Miss Ledbetter. I mean, please, you owe it to yourself. Honestly, you really do. So, there's that. And, you know, this is the thing. I mean, John Burko has a heart, man. He does. And when news of Joe Cox, and that was so horrible what happened to her. Oh, so horrible. Some right-wing, evil-ass piece of garbage murdered her. It was awful. And she died doing the people's work. I mean, this is, you know, this is really difficult to talk about this stuff and not feel something. And that was the same for Burko when he was in any tears. And yeah, you know, people, we need to have our feelings. It's very important for all of us to do that. And I guess it does depend on where you were raised, how you were raised, and, you know, your whole household around emotions. But John Burko does not spare us his. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's healthy to emote. It is healthy to get things off your chest in a, obviously, in a non-violent way, of course. That's what I mean. Get things off your chest and speak about them. Get them off your heart. Get them off your mind. Get them out of your soul. And converse with people you love. Converse with your partner, your spouse, your loved ones. Talk, please. And express. It's so important, whether you write, whether you talk, whether you whatever. But just get this out of you, because otherwise it will drive you crazy. And having feelings is a good thing, not a bad thing. And John Burko knows that. And he was profoundly disheartened and very sad about the murder of Joe Cox. That was a horror. That really rocked English politics. Although you wouldn't know it now, 5 years or so later. You wouldn't blooming well know it, because these conservatives acting like hyenas. And a lot worse than that. I shouldn't be comparing it, putting animals in there, because that's a disrespect to hyenas. But I just really lament what's happened here. And John Burko, I think, coming to the Labour Party. Well, let me tell you something, Speaker Burko. We're glad to have you.
change of pace now, and here in the U.S., there are two United States senators standing in the way. Standing in the way. They are obstructionists. They are standing in the way of changing the culture in the United States military when it comes to the female members of that military. They do not, and they, meaning these two white male senators of the United States of America, and I'll mention them in a minute. You know who one of them is because I've already told you. They are standing in the way of change. They are blocking progress. They do not want the military to change when it comes to misogyny, when it comes to rape, when it comes to other sorts of violence visited upon women. They don't want the culture to change. They want it to stay right the hell where it is. Both of them, or at least one of them, Jack Reed, a Democratic senator, was in the military, served in Vietnam, if I remember correctly. And he's a senator, he's still a senator, in Rhode Island. And he's blocking this. Military Justice Improvement and Increasing Prevention Act. Kirsten Gillibrand, the senator out of New York State, a Democrat, said that this act would overhaul how the armed services handle accusations of rape, sexual assault, and other serious crimes. I'm reading now from the New York Times editorial from June the 19th. That was just yesterday, of course. In addition to beefing up training and prevention, the proposal would shift the decision to prosecute many felonies from the chain of command to independent, trained, professional military prosecutors. I guess this would be in the mold of what? A Few Good Men? Tom Cruise and the Jags and the prosecutorial team? I don't know. It probably would be something like that, or maybe not. I don't know. I don't want to put films in the middle of this. Although I did play you a few days ago on these episodes, the most famous showdown in the last 30 years of film, which is Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson there, with the "you can't handle the truth" line that is so very famous. So this is really disgusting. And how can you possibly have a universe where Ted Cruz, who is a traitor and someone who really should have handcuffs on right now, Senator Warren, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, Joni Ernst, Bernie Sanders, and another traitor here coming up, Josh Hawley. Yeah, she'd have handcuffs on, Josh Hawley. They all support the Military Justice Improvement and Increasing Prevention Act. And who doesn't support it? Jack friggin' Reed, a Democrat. Why? Here's his reasoning. Shaking up the sexual assault's a good idea, but I don't like Senator Gillibrand's bill, you see, because it applies to other felonies too. It's too broad. These guys, it's just garbage. This is just absolute garbage. I mean, this is just absolute garbage from the Democratic senator out of Rhode Island. And the ranking Republican, Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, he's quite happy to say, yeah, of course he's going to say, yeah, we need to block this stinking bill. Because we don't believe women should be allowed to serve in the military at all, for a start. So they should have to pay the consequences. I mean, this is the mindset. I'm not saying that he actually said those words, and those are not my words either. Well, they are my words, but I don't believe, obviously, what I just said. I'm just, you know, putting a point out here that I'm sure there's someone in the world who believes that. There's lots of people in the world, not someone. There's millions of people who don't think a woman should serve in the military. Well, to my message to them is fuck them. Those people who don't think a woman should serve in the military. Fuck you. That's my message to you. Are you kidding? Jack Reed is not kidding. He's blooming serious. Jack Reed. Is he up for re-election next year? And Jim Inhofe, Jesus crikey. I mean, I don't know if he is running or not next year, or if he got in last year or not. But let me tell you something. You need to be calling his office. I don't care that he's a Republican. Call his office. Call Jack Reed's office. 202-224-3121. 202-225-3121. What the devil is going on? I think I just gave you the answer in the question. But this is just absolutely disgusting. No one, I'm reading from the editorial again here from the Times. Quote, they are both against my bill and they would like to kill it in committee, Senator Gillibrand told the New York Times recently. If this happens, it will be a disservice to the country. You think? I mean, that's kind of mild, isn't it? It's kind of mild, isn't it? It would be a disservice to the country. Boy, I can think of a lot stronger language than that. But I won't voice it here because I've already kind of voiced it. Be a fucking disgrace. I mean, I think that is just the minimum of the language that I will share here because I don't want to completely pollute your ears with my foul, potty mouth on a Sunday, no less. But you might not be listening to this on a Sunday, so I guess it's perfectly okay. But anyway. No one seriously disputes, says the editorial in the New York Times, that the U.S. military has a sexual assault problem. Yeah, and I would say it has a misogyny problem, and it has a violent male problem. Can we actually really flesh this out some more? It has a violent men fucking problem. That's what it's got. And, you know, we've got to talk about safeguards, but we've also got to talk about getting these men out of the military who are violent. They're violent everywhere except on the blooming battlefield. I mean, they are violent on that too. But they're violent off the field. We've got to get those people out. And then they have to get help. And serve prison time. And get the help while they're in prison, I should say. But they've got to be punished. And you've got to take this out of the chain of command. You cannot have the wolf guarding the hen house. And you cannot have prosecutions that are being done by people who are vested in keeping the system exactly where it is. And so, when I tell you what I'm about to read to you from this op-ed, brace yourself for this, okay? Because this may be triggering. According to the Defense Department's 2018 report on the subject of sexual assault, in fiscal year 2018, an estimated 20,500 service members were sexually assaulted or raped, including 13,000 women and 7,500 men. Only a tiny fraction of reported cases resulted in a conviction. That leads to lower confidence in the military justice system for the all-volunteer force. Many incidents go unreported altogether, which is unsurprising, considering that, quote, 64% of women who reported a sexual assault face retaliation, according to the advocacy group Protect Our Defenders. So I've just read you something that's extremely uncomforting and uncomfortable and discomforting and disturbing. And yet not surprising, sadly. And those two things are, first, that the two senators want to get rid of this bill that would help make things a lot more perilous, and gladly so for these men who do this. Because it's got to be about getting these men out of there and changing the culture. The men who do, and the whole culture has to change. And this bill does go some ways, or at least some ways, to doing that. But I think overall the culture needs to change. And I'm not the only one that thinks that. Come on. I mean, I'm sure, think the same thing, dear listener. This is just absolutely heinous. The second thing is the thing I just read out to you. This was just 3 years ago. 20,500 service members estimated. And it's more than that because, as I read further on, there are many, many women who do not ever report what happened to them. And for damn good reason. Because we've got a society that is toxically misogynist, that is patriarchal, that condemns women and treats them as if they are paranoid, gaslights them, mocks them, re-traumatizes them, re-violates them, and the pathetic responses that they give to a woman pouring her heart and soul out, being as vulnerable as she could possibly ever be, for someone to just laugh it off and then to retaliate against her and then promote her rapist. And these two senators, oh no, we don't want a bill that deals with getting rid of all that. We don't want a bill. We want to kill the bill. One of them's a Democrat. I'm telling you, if Jack Reed is running next year, there needs to be a progressive challenge to him. Light a fire under his ass. In fact, better yet, tweet him and let him know that you're not happy with this. Or better yet, make a phone call to him. 202-225-3121. 202-224-3121. This is absolutely unconscionable. You cannot do this. That's just, I just read you a small portion of that op-ed from yesterday's New York Times, June the 19th, 2021. I think this is reprehensible. And I really do believe that you need to be tweeting Jack Reed, Senator Jack Reed, R-E-E-D. I just think that you can't, you knowing this now, you cannot let that slide. Again, this is what I said about the corporate response by Bath and, you know, Bath and Body Works to Juneteenth. You can't let that slide with Jack Reed. And Jim Inhofe, I'm not going to forget him. He's a Republican, and he needs to be called out, and you need to be calling his office too. You need to be tweeting both of these. They both have Twitter accounts. Tweet them. I know their staff is the one that reads them. Again, you don't have to, listen, I don't recommend your name, you know, being rude to him. But show him that you're ticked off at this. And tell him to support this law, this bill, that Kirsten Gillibrand, Senator Gillibrand, is put forth. You need to pressure these guys and support, and also say thank you to Senator Gillibrand. She's on Twitter as well. Tweet you her thanks. Tweet her your thanks. So we can do two things at once. We can tweet thanks to Senator Gillibrand, and we can go after, well, we can tweet, go after, that's not right. Tweet, at minimum, tweet Reed and Inhofe and call their offices. It's just criminal. And we're going to be, I guess I keep saying this over and over, in a few days' time, we're going to wave a flag and celebrate the country's independence. And we're not going to be thinking about the country's independence at all. We're going to just be thinking about the next burger that we're going to eat. I know. So cynical, am I? But that's the reality. A lot of people in this country, I mean, there are people who obviously do care about the country and do care about the history and know that the history is not bathed in this glorious, lovely independence. Because at the time, as I keep saying, black folk were in chains. So, you know, but there are going to be people so reflexively waving flags and thanking people for service and then not caring that Vanessa Guillen is no longer here. Or that someone else is no longer here. And I've talked about Vanessa Guillen, and I'm going to keep mentioning her name. Because Vanessa Guillen, and you can go look up who Vanessa Guillen was, served in the military. And what Fort Hood, Texas, and what they did to her there, and that army base, and what that guy did before, I think he took his own life, piece of garbage. It's just evil. It's evil. And the family, the dedicated family there, You know, the Guillen family, who, again, I want to just say that I send my prayers to you every day. And we need justice for Vanessa. We need justice for Vanessa Guillen. And we need justice for all of these other service members who have been murdered or who have been raped or both. And there's been no redress, nothing, nothing. And Jack Reed and blimmin' Jim Inhofe, well, they want to keep it that way. Welcome back. I just wanted to get those two other stories out there. John Bercow becoming a Labour supporter, which in the grand scheme of things is not surprising and is not as important to, well, it's not as important to this podcast as I think some people make it. In other circles relative to what they do. But it is some news that I think I wanted to share because it reflects how serious trouble, how much serious trouble England and the United Kingdom at large are in. It really does. And so to have a Conservative, and I know he resigned, as he mentioned in the interview, party membership in the Conservatives just before he took the office of Speaker of the House of Commons. It just shows you what's happened over these last 10, 11, 12, 13 years. Austerity has happened, and the Tories have brought it to you on a big, shiny silver platter, and it absolutely continues. And you're still getting the crumbs that are wobbling off Boris Johnson's platter, and you've got the calamity that is... the calamity... that is Dominic Cummings, even though I think he is doing a public service here in exposing what we already really know about how disgusting these Tories are and sleazy this government is. It's a sleazy-ass government, come on. Their asses are hanging out all over the place, and everybody can see that they don't wipe them. Everybody can see that they don't wipe. Sorry to be disgusting and scatological, but it's the truth. These people are disgusting. Much more disgusting than what I just said to you. And they just continue to suck and suck the blood out of the country, out of the whole UK. And the right-wing media just keeps parroting, oh, you know, it's okay. And just doing writing press releases for these people. And that includes Sky, and Sky is not a right-wing media outlet. It just is so deferential, like everybody, the BBC especially, oh God. And they're not right-wing either, although some people would say they are. And they just absolutely kowtow to everything. David Cameron, this is in Sky, did this a couple of weeks ago when David Cameron testified about the Greensill scandal, where he invested in this company with this guy who was a blooming criminal. I mean, and just absolutely fleet. And then all these people... got fleeced. Everyday people lost their pensions, lost this, lost all their blooming savings, lost the friggin' retirement, lost a lot. And all you've got people on Sky saying is, well, and then there was an MP from Labour, and I forget her name. It could have been Ali, Roshanara Ali. Roshanara Ali is Labour MP. She absolutely, and I played this on the podcast here a few weeks ago when that happened. She grilled his ass. Grilled David Cameron and said, this is beneath you as the Prime Minister. This is an absolute shame. This is a disgrace. She went off on him, and she didn't go even... I wouldn't even say she went off. She just told it like it was and did so in no uncertain terms. And you got someone on Sky going, well, he faced quite a grilling there, Mr. Cameron. Like, fuck yeah, he should get a grilling. Don't be sorry for him. And the way that the reporter said it too, you know. She's like, oh, well, he faced... quite a grilling there. Oh, well, yeah. She's doing her job. It's not even a grilling. It's, you know, really, it's she's doing her job as an MP, which is what the constituents voted for her to do. don't act all sympathetic to David Cameron. He's doing very well, thank you very much. And even if he wasn't, to be doing that, to be fleecing people. Oh, well, I didn't know, and I didn't know. He was really trustworthy, this guy Greensill, and, you know, he was good. Oh, give him a break. Oh, but I'm not going to tell anybody that I did all this, and I should have, and, oh, please. And you're going to, oh, but he got grilled. Oh, but he, but million, but a load of people lost their blooming life savings. How come you're not showing sympathy for that? No. You know, oh, but he got a grilling. I mean, you totally know what this system and who is, you know what this system and who it, let me just say this again. You know who this system is genuflecting to. That's what I'm trying to get out of my mouth. From my brain to my mouth, to your ear. The system is clearly genuflecting to these folks who are of the system, who are creators of it. It's not genuflecting to you. It's not genuflecting to me. It's not genuflecting to us or the average person out there. Oh, but David Cameron, who makes millions of pounds, who has a blooming book deal, who wrote a book last year that came out and was a bestseller, and does all this stuff, was prime minister, was the one that threw that stinking Brexit deal in to begin with. Remember, dear listener, if you're not familiar, I will refresh your recollection now, that he resigned because he was the one, even before the resignation, who said, oh, you know, well, there's no way this Brexit thing's going to ever get passed. This referendum will never pass. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, ho, ho. Ho, 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 ho. And of course, let them in. Let them have it then. And of course, you had your blooming referendum. June 23rd, 2016. And then what happened? Of course the blooming thing passed. 52-48. And I know. I can hear you now. Yes, there was lies. Yes, there was chicanery. Yes, 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 yes. Yes, people didn't know what they were voting for in some instances. Yes, Boris Johnson lied his ass off. What's new? Michael Gove did too, and all these other people. And now what? No one's even talking about Brexit anymore. And it's a shambles, that's why. It's a shit show shambles. And the press, none of them are talking about it. And then David Cameron's fault. This is David Cameron's fault. And of course the right-wing media and the press aren't going after him. They should be going after David Cameron. David Cameron's the one that opened the doors for all of this. And he just allowed himself to walk away. And nothing happened. He didn't face any kind of charge or anything. I mean, I think for this Greensill stuff, where's the indictment? Where's the... No. He was a former prime minister. We're not going to do that to him. And why not? His ass should be having handcuffs on it, minimum. I'm sure they're not handcuffs big enough to put around his ass. But you get the point I'm trying to get to here. This guy, I mean, come on. This guy skated. He's not a lucky politician. It's the white male privilege. He's just skating through. Oh my God, really? Jeez. And he's the one that opened the door. Oh, it passed. Oh, bye. I resign. I'm gone. And then he left and let Theresa May come in. And you know what happened after that? The rest is history. It's just absolutely abominable. It's absolutely abominable. And so, you know, that's the thing. You know, this is where I think the importance of having a John Bercow who did really kind of speak truth to power from the speaker's chair to the conservatives in particular was valuable, I think, for me. And it's kind of more of a selfish thing on my part, but it's valuable to know this, that he did switch parties. I mean, I suspected, listen to me. I've always felt that he was a Labour guy at heart anyway, that he was a bit more of a compassionate person who cared about the people. And to have Trevor Phillips question this guy, you know, this is the first interview he gave on television since announcing it in the Observer newspaper today, that he was going to be a Labour person. And that he switched parties. And this is the kind of reception he got. You heard the interview. Trevor Phillips can't interview. And I'm sorry. I know some people are not going to like me saying that. Least of all, Trevor Phillips. I'm sure he doesn't even give a rat's ass what I have to say about anything. And while I respect him as a human being, of course, I thought that he was so poor in that interview. That's just really ridiculous. And John Bercow, as I said earlier, kind of let him know that, but in a really imperceptibly subtle way. And I am going to not so imperceptibly tell you that this is the end of this episode. And I think I've clocked in just under an hour or so here. I don't know. But I think I have, or I've come very close to it. So I just want to thank you for listening. Your listenership is very appreciated. It really matters to me that you do continue to listen. And I look at the metrics and everything else, and I just want to say thank you very much. And I also would like you to patronize the Politocrat Daily Podcast store, won't you? You can find it online at the-politocrat.myshopify.com. And the Summer Sensations series continues on. There will be more that you'll be seeing on the site coming up this week. So take a look and buy. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.